everyone, and welcome to On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. I'm your host, Hannah Stanley, and today we continue our conversation about sports. With me today is Tanya Pruitt-White. She is the program chair of the Sport and Health Psychology Department at Adler. Tanya, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hannah.
That's okay. I trip people up all the time. Before we jump into the content, I do want to remind people and ask them to hit subscribe so you don't miss a moment of the content that we put together every single week. Now, when parents have kids, and I think that this is a very tremendous mindset for a group of parents where they think my kid's going to be a great athlete. My child is going to be incredible. That's their ticket out of here. That's their ticket into college or whatever that mindset. There's, you know, you can come at it from a whole different roads, many different roads. But the whole destination for some families is scholarship. Either full ride, which is kind of the holy grail, you know, people brag about that at parties. My son had a full ride, or enough scholarship where it makes that education attainable. Mm-hmm. You've got some opinions, though, and some background on why that's not necessarily the ideal.
Definitely. I think one of the things that we've created in the culture of sport today is in youth sport. We have parents and families who are paying $10,000, $15,000 a year for their child to be part of a volleyball club, a hockey club, or AAU, and they travel. And in that idea is they're spending all this money for their child to get, like you said, this full ride scholarship. But with that comes a ton of pressure. In addition, the family unit might be separated. So if we have parents who have multiple children, they might have one child who's flying to DC, and they're playing in a volleyball tournament, and the mother's going with, and the father's going with another child to California, and they're playing in a basketball tournament. And so what ends up happening is the family dynamic revolves around the success of the child, as well as all of the tournaments that their children are playing with over time. And so the money that it takes is a lot of pressure where parents are telling their children, you know, we're paying this money for you to be a part of this club. So you have to do it. You have to go to practice. And they might not even, they'll be doing that on top of their high school sports or their middle school sports in addition to that. And it's taking away from time from their academics, from social life, from their ability to do other things and quote unquote just be a kid, be involved in prom. So it's creating this culture where student athletes, young kids, have to make all of these decisions on are they going to be an athlete or are they going to be a kid and do the things that normal kids, quote unquote, would do. And at the same time, it's putting a lot of strain on the family dynamic, on the relationships of parents to not only afford this, but also to create this child, this prodigy child in sport, where the parents too are putting their identity into the success of their child in a sport.
So what would you say to the argument of this is teaching them better time management? This is teaching them the priorities and how to, it's not always like I'll handle one thing at a time when you're an adult. There's a lot of stuff that piles on and, you know, these kids learn at an early age that, you know, we can say no to things and say yes to things and prioritize and really focus on what's important.
Yeah. My counter narrative to that would be that a lot of times what we have is we have student athletes that don't learn time management because it's structured for them. It's structured by the coach. It's structured by the parent. If we look at collegiate athletes, they lack any time management skill because they're told where to go. You know, you're going to be at workouts at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. Then you're going to go to your classes. Then you're going to go see the nutritionist. Then we're going to look at film. Then we're going to have practice. And so what we have is we have young adults that aren't able to manage their time because they've never had that choice. And so if we go back a step and we look at the youth athlete, as far as making choices, they might learn to make choices with their parents. So, you know, I want to play volleyball over soccer. But what they don't learn potentially is time management because it's structured for them. They're going to go in workouts or practice in the morning with their high school team. Then they're going to go to class. They're going to go to school. And then in the evening, they're going to go to, you know, the practice or their event for their club team. And so that's what we see is that they're not really having to manage time because it's structured for them. And so we create young adults who really don't, when they're provided choice, maybe once out of college, out of high school, they don't know how to structure their time. They maybe don't make good decisions with their time and lack those time management skills.
You mentioned also that a lot of times the parents' identities are wrapped up within the child's sport of choice or what the how they excel. Mm-hmm. And I'll do the stereotypical parent again. My child did this. My child did, you know, such and such. My child scored the winning touchdown. That's a huge thing for parents. Mm-hmm. To be that mom and dad. Is it then a natural leap to say that a lot of times these kids are playing sports because of their parents, not necessarily for the scholarship, but really so that there's something to, you know, puff that chest out about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll start by saying I think a lot of times parents don't do this consciously. I think it happens over time. I don't think parents are ill-willed. But I think what happens, and being a sports psychology consultant, I can honestly say that I've worked with even collegiate athletes that will say, I've continued participating because I know how invested my parents would be. I don't want to break my dad's heart and quit because of everything he's done for me to get to this point in my career. And so I think that's a really big piece because athletes are very aware of everything that their parents have invested in them, not only financially, emotionally. Also, siblings might make sacrifices as well. So your brother Johnny is not as great at sports. So he is not, you know, he's going to help provide for the home. And we see this in lower socioeconomic status families where potentially another child will go to work and help pay the bills so that they can pay for their child to be in AAU or they can be in a club team to be seen to get this college scholarship in the future.
And then once they get the scholarship, and so like if all things are healthy in the home, right, there's it's an only child, so no siblings are affected, and they really love the sport, and the kid is the one driving this, like, I must play basketball all the time, it's my thing, and the parents are able to provide for it, but then they still get them to the scholarship point, where are the things that we need to be aware of when they do get a full ride or a good ride to school?
Mm-hmm. There's so many things to be aware of. I think for starting off with parents is to understand the pressure that the child will be under. Also recognizing that the academics most likely, especially at your if you're at a big time institution, won't come first.
And like a Division I type school.
Yeah, and primarily the bigger D1 schools as well. So parents, families will spend all this money, all this investment to get their child to university for a full ride or for a scholarship. And then the athlete will get there and realize how much pressure they're under, that the academics, you know, that they can't have their major. They want to be a nurse. Well, you can't be a nursing major because you can't do the rounds. You can't do the observations because you have to be at class. You know, you have to travel. And so there's a limit, as we know and we've seen at Northwestern and other universities, there's a limit of the programs that the student athletes could potentially register for. And so we have academic advisors who know this. So the student athletes might be pushed to degrees like sociology, psychology, history, things like that, where there's not the labs and there's not other observational opportunities for the student athlete.
So, and then they can't step away from the sport that's keeping them from their chosen profession or chosen field of study, because if they do, then they lose their full ride and they can't afford that school.
Yeah, right. They wouldn't be at that university if it weren't for their athletics. And so they find themselves in this conundrum where they can't obtain the degree potentially that they want to. But at the same time, they have to stay there. So a lot of times we see, especially in sports like men's basketball and men's football, where we see student athletes that might obtain a degree, but they can't do anything with the degree. And they also haven't had the other experiences that other students have at institutions. For example, having an internship or an externship and those types of things. So they have little work experience to get them to the next level. Or for a career, they don't even have the ability to write a paper at a collegiate level. So a lot of times we will find at big time D1 schools in sports like football and basketball, we'll have large number of student athletes whose reading level might not even be at the seventh grade. And we're pushing them through programs. And so there's the scandal at the University of North Carolina, for example, where they created courses where the students didn't have to go to class, they didn't have to turn in papers, but received grades in African American studies. and received a degree, and then they have their degree, but what do they do with it when they don't have these other skills?
Because the percentage of collegiate athletes who go on to be professional athletes is incredibly small. Incredibly. And we're already dealing with a smaller percentage because there's only a few sports that they could be professional at. Mm-hmm. Baseball is a different story a little bit because they go into the minor leagues usually and then work their way up. So they do have to do some things because they're not making a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing a little bit in hockey, definitely football and basketball, a really, really small percentage.
Yeah. For university athletes, D1, it's less than 1%.
And that's Division I.
Yeah, right. Right.
So less than 1%. So we need to, you know, you would think the universities would be far more focused on getting the other 99% to be good representatives of their educational quality. And that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah. Not at all. I think the educational piece isn't highlighted because that's not what profits. That's not what makes these universities money or promotes their image. We also know if in the NCAA, you make it to the tournament or you're in the Final Four, you win a championship for some of these programs, you also see a rise in admissions. So more people apply. You also, which is interesting, the average student body, the SAT, ACT scores rise, things like that. So they get a higher clientele of students that are applying to these institutions. So in many facets, these universities also profit from the athletic side of the student athletes, but they don't profit from the educational piece.
So when these collegiate athletes, high school athletes, collegiate athletes end their playing career, which they do, 99% of them are done after their final game in college, where does their self-esteem go when they realize they don't necessarily know much aside from how to play that sport?
Exactly. So it depends on the athlete, right? What type of social capital he or she has. And if the athlete doesn't have much social capital and their entire identity was around the sport and they don't have leads or parents that know people, essentially their identity drops, their self-esteem drops, because what do I do now that I'm not an athlete? People know me as a soccer player, a football player, and I know nothing else. In addition to that, there's a huge loss of social experience. So you think about the culture of sport, their buddies, their friends are all athletes, and all of a sudden now they're graduated, you disperse potentially across the country, and you go and you get, you know, your first job, and it might be selling cars or doing something like that, and you go home and you have no structure, talking about the time management. And so we do see depression, loss of identity, confusion of what to do next, what is my life worth. So it's not uncommon to see that as well.
And there's also, I would imagine, a lack of validation because of what they've been driven towards winning and driven towards succeeding. And now they go to this part-time job or a full-time job where they're not constantly told, great job, great play, great whatever. Does that cause them some angst as well?
Mm-hmm. I think for athletes, and I don't want to, you know, generally speaking, there's a high in sport, right? The winning and the losing and the competing, and then the search for where's this next high going to come from? And if it's not coming, it's not coming from a mundane job, you know, looking for where they might find that as well. And so we do see gambling problems. You might see alcohol addiction, things like that, because there's this huge loss within their life. A big piece of their life is missing.
Do we see that in this particular group in higher rates than we do in the general population?
That's a really great question.
Okay.
And I think it's going to depend on what sources you read, but I don't have a final answer to
okay.
that.
Yeah. Because it would, yeah, some of these stats are really, depends on who you're asking.
Exactly.
NCAA, I'm sure, would say no. Mm-hmm. No. It's totally average.
It depends on what answer you're looking for, right?
Exactly. What do you want me to say? Because I can prove it. When we have parents listening to this, and they're now saying, well, but this is the way. This is the way to get them to this. Or my child loves this. Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that this is a healthy path for our children? Because some kids do.
Yeah, for sure. It's not all bad. You know, there's a lot of student athletes that do receive an education, so it's not one and all and every scenario. I think the biggest thing for parents is being aware of the environment that their children may be entering. Is a big piece of it. And preparing the student athletes, you know, we have more and more young people are educated, they have social media, so they're aware of things that might not have been aware of 10, 15 years ago. But knowing that, you know, that you have to fight for your education, that piece of it, you have to fight to say, no, I really want to be a teacher. And so we even find that at these big time D1 schools, students can't go into teacher education. The reason being, they can't do the student teaching. You can't, you know, the traveling. How are you going to do that? So fighting for that, thinking about the implications of that, maybe doing student teaching in your fifth, sixth year, planning ahead. But I think the biggest piece is awareness, both for the parents and the child. And then thinking about, is it worth it? Is it worth putting your child through, starting in seventh, eighth grade, all of this pressure to be a state champion, to be a D1 athlete? Is it true? And maybe it is, maybe it's not. But thinking about the amount of money and energy that you'll be putting into this as a family unit for one outcome, and there's so many things that could change that. An injury could happen, you know, right, at practice. It could be when you're walking down the street, strange things happen. And so just being aware of the amount of pressure that's on a child and talking about it and encouraging your children to have other identities, encouraging them, even if it's minimally, to play an instrument, to have friends outside of their sport, to have a social life, even if it means one night a week going to the movies with friends. But we see in a lot of youth athletes that this is not part of their everyday, what their days look like. Is, for example, let's take a baseball player. I've seen this in fourth grade where I worked with a fourth grader who, let's say for like on Monday evenings, he had his pitching practice. On Tuesday evenings, it was the practice with his club team. On Wednesday evening, he competed. Thursdays, he was at batting practice. Friday, he's competing with his, you know, area team. And then weekends, they're traveling for. And so you start to think about.
And that was, wow, a fourth grader.
Yeah, a fourth grader. And you start thinking about, when is the time for this young child to develop other sorts of identities?
Yeah, play a board game with his sister.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, because there, I mean, I've read stories of families moving into a school district to be on that state championship football team or be in the good swimming team, the great club, because this is the way. Mm-hmm. This is how they're going to excel. But when you realize that there is a low likelihood of your particular child. I mean, if you come on, like, look in the mirror for a second, people, and realize that 99% of these parents, their child's not going to play pro. Mm-hmm. Then can we better figure out if a smaller school might be more focused versus the larger D1 schools for the education and more for focusing on making and creating a better student at the end, or can you fight for that education at any of the schools if you really mm-hmm. want it?
Yeah, some student athletes do decide to go Division III because they don't want to, quote unquote, be owned by the university or by their coach. However, I've worked with Division III athletes who said, you know, that they thought they'd be a student first before an athlete, and then they start to find themselves in the same type of situation. And because if you think about the coach's salary is based upon winning, even at the D3 level. And so the coach wants them to be training as much as possible, to be number one, to be lifting weights, in good health, watching film. And so a lot of times we find these D3 athletes who feel the same types of pressure. However, they do have more control because the scholarship isn't going to be, quote unquote, taken away from them. And so we do find that some D3 coaches and programs will be more open to them really pursuing the degrees that they want and the educational standpoint. But it also depends on the program and the coach, because it all comes down to winning, even at the D3 level.
So really what you would suggest as a sports and health psychology professional is to really communicate with the child and figure out what that kid wants, not what the kid not saying what the parent wants. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be a nurse or a teacher or a doctor, and then weigh that, because you're right, the money that's spent starting in kindergarten sometimes or earlier is astronomical. I've actually tried to figure out if you spend more than you get in the scholarship. And like, maybe if you just saved that money, yeah. you wouldn't have needed the scholarship. And I think in some cases that's absolutely true.
For sure.
But if it's something that the kids need to really do, like the gut check and figure out what they want to be, that's mm-hmm. hard. That's hard. Mm-hmm. I know grownups who don't know what they want to be when they grow up.
Definitely. I think the biggest piece is in the recruiting process, whether being recruited by a D3 school or D1, is if the academic piece is very important to the family, is that they ask the coach, they talk to the other student athletes that are currently at the university and see what they're majoring in. And if you find out that the majority of a team is majoring in, and it's no offense, I have a psychology undergrad degree myself, but if they're, you know, majors are psychology, sociology, things of that sort, you might see that there is a trend where they're going into classes that are offered at the times,
right,
where practice and travel can be arranged around it, where it might not be as rigorous. And so really doing some investigation throughout that recruiting process and asking not only the coaches, former athletes, current athletes, ask what former athletes are doing now with, you know, that graduated. What are they doing now? Where are their careers? To find out if that was highlighted, if the academic piece was truly important.
Very good advice. Tanya Pruitt-White joining us. She's the program chair of sport and health psychology at Adler University. This is on Social Health and Change, presented by Adler University. I'm Hannah Stanley. We are going to continue with our conversation about athletics in our next segment. Please hit subscribe so you don't miss a moment. Thanks so much for listening.